Welcome to the MacGuffin Man. I'm Alex, and with me is James. We're talking about Black Mirror today. If you missed part one of this podcast, you can find it on our website or on iTunes. Our website is themacguffinman.com, and on iTunes, you can find us at The MacGuffin Man, all one word. And yeah, subscribe and rate us. If you feel we're a five-star podcast, then please give us 5 stars. If you feel we are a one-star podcast, please give us 5 stars. But yeah, if you didn't listen to part one, check out part one, or if you only watch series two of Black Mirror, stay tuned for this one.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. And now, here are Alex and James.
And why didn't you watch series one?
That is a valid question.
Yeah. Also, if you missed all of Black Mirror, welcome to most of the population of the world. But you're missing out.
Yeah. Let's give a shout out to all the TV critics we like who have seen it. Also, nobody else.
Yeah. So, Andy Greenwald, thank you for not listening. Yes, seriously, if you actually just downloaded this episode for some reason and haven't seen Black Mirror, it is a very good show and probably worth your time.
Yep.
But now we're talking about series two.
Yeah.
So we start with Be Right Back. Let's say slightly futuristic.
Yep.
Kind of her, but not.
Yes.
I like this episode a lot, though. I liked her more. But this I thought was a good episode. Kind of creepy, like a lot of Black Mirror, but kind of a sci-fi horror creepy at times that I really enjoyed. Another social media heavy one, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's sort of the things... this is easily my second favorite episode of Black Mirror.
I thought you didn't like most of... Oh, I guess you said everything after the... Okay, yeah, I got you.
I love this episode, and I think the difference between this and the entire history of You isn't that huge as far as my enjoyment, which I think is a really impressive feat for Be Right Back. I think it's great. I like the entire history of You. I like the combination of it allowing you to think about technology and it allowing you to think about how you feel about things unrelated to technology in your personal life.
Like the Bee Gees.
Exactly. Like, how deep is your love? You know, like, who doesn't want to think about that song on a daily basis? I just think it's great. And it's so, so well put together. It's so well shot. It looks like an episode of House of Cards, which is a very high compliment. I think it's great. I think Hayley Atwell's great in it. I think the guy that plays Ash is very good as well. I like it a lot. I think it's so well executed and executed to the level that 15 Million Merits is just about, but also has some more things in the writing that I actually find very fascinating.
Okay. Yeah. Right off the intro, we get kind of Ash being a less than perfect partner, kind of too into his own phone to let her into the car while her hands are burning. And then even after that, kind of being, very into his phone, and she's not a big fan, but
she makes him put it in the glove box.
Yeah. And then, you know, even when he's at home, he kind of gets right back to it, and she says some obviously insincere things about spitting in his coffee or serving his soup out of his shoe, but just kind of to drive home the point of how deep into it he is. Mm-hmm. But it's that level of devotion to his phone that really lets the rest of the episode play out as it does after he dies.
Yeah, for sure.
At his funeral, her friend says, you know, he was a very heavy user. He'd be perfect. So it's, you know, exactly his disengagement with real life in the, you know, present physical space that lets his copy be as accurate as it is. Mm-hmm. And from what we see, it is pretty accurate. I mean, there's some things he needs. She kind of teaches him, which is a really weird and interesting part of the episode. But yeah, it's the fact that he was so into it that allows them to take everything he's ever posted and all these videos and all the recordings of his voice and make a pretty accurate doppelganger of her.
Him. Yeah.
Yeah. One kind of little thing that's just as he dies, just right after he dies, not really thematic, but just another thing I like about this episode, because like you, I agree. I think this is a very well put together episode just from a kind of a direction, writing, acting standpoint as well. Mm-hmm. But when the cops come to the house and she just kind of closes the door and walks away, mm-hmm. I thought that was a nice little moment. I've never seen that move.
I've seen it in something. I was trying to figure out what I've seen it in, but yeah, I've definitely seen it before.
Yeah, see, I haven't seen that in a movie or in real life, but that was like just a really small moment that I thought resonated really well. Okay. And was just kind of a good reaction of something I'd never seen.
Mm-hmm. See, I think it was because I had seen it in something else. I had the opposite reaction to it.
Okay. Yeah. But maybe when you saw it in the first thing, you liked.
Oh, I'm willing to bet a lot of money that I did. If only we okay. could verify my memory.
Yeah. Oh, no. Redos. Yeah, so it's, you know, I already kind of compared it to her, and I think of the similar scene when he kind of installs the OS for the first time, mm-hmm. is when she's first kind of putting this profile together. And in her, developing the OS is so much about, and this isn't spoiling anything if you haven't seen her, by the way, kind of the development of the OS is just kind of catering to what the customer likes and kind of asking them questions and building something around that. Whereas with this one, it's building someone, or, you know, rebuilding someone that has already existed. Mm-hmm. And so it was a kind of a fun little difference, because I thought her was fantastic, but this kind of plays with it a little bit. And, you know, her saying, oh, you'd argue with me, like all these things about constructing someone, mm-hmm. in her versus, you know, reconstructing, putting someone back together, trying to make an accurate representation of someone who really did exist and had a very particular personality. And, you know, these people clearly were very close and loved each other and had known each other for what seemed like many, many years.
10 years.
10?
Yeah.
Okay.
She says in 10 years, you've never played the Bee Gees.
Okay. There you go. Yeah, I just rewatched that too. Yeah, I think that's kind of a fascinating difference between the two. And the line that I already said, you know, argue with me. Ash wouldn't leave just because I've ordered him to. Kind of that idea of not making a custom person, not having exactly what you want. Part of what you like about the people that I think you really care about is they don't let you get away with everything. They don't let you walk all over them. And kind of to teach a robot to disagree with you and to fight back with you was kind of a very interesting idea to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What did you like about the idea of how the robot was made? Like, as far as
what, the bathtub and electrolytes?
Yeah, the bathtub and electrolytes, as well as going through kind of your entire social media history and developing a personality through that.
Okay, so I mean, I think those are two very different things. the personality and the actual body, the making of the body, I didn't really care that much about. It was just sort of like, okay, cool, he's a body now. You know, I didn't really care how they put him together. But the personality thing I found very interesting. It was sort of like, you know, when you hear people joking about, you know, when I die, delete my browser history, that type of thing. It was sort of all about this digital wake that we leave behind. And, you know, we're leaving it behind. You and I are leaving it behind in the form of a podcast about the tweets I sent out earlier today. You know, I mean, we're making this wake even as we're still alive. It's just sort of becomes the representative thing that we can look back on of ourselves, like the sort of verifiable thing that we can look back on after we die, or that other people can look back on. But the thing I really loved about it was that line that they use at the very beginning, which I pointed out already, 10 years, you've never played the Bee Gees. She is still learning about new things about this person. And, you know, we're leaving a representation of ourself behind, but we're not leaving ourselves behind. Like, but you still can't really get ourselves. You know what I mean? And I found that really interesting, and I think that's the construction of the personality. That's what this whole episode's about, you know?
Yeah, though I thought the line you're going to bring up that I really love is the photos we keep tend to be flattering.
And yeah, that I like that line a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the comparison of the kind of digital representation of ourselves that we choose, or mostly that we choose. I mean, I guess there's pictures and videos that other people have taken, mm-hmm. but for the most part, if you were to do something like this, it would be, you know, your Facebook, your Twitter, your emails, your videos, and the ones you don't like, you delete, and the ones that, you know, aren't flattering, you delete, or you never post in the first place, or...
If we, you and I were to die, I don't think there would be a very accurate recreation of either of us. You know, like, I feel like there would be a more accurate representation of me. I don't know that any pictures of you would exist on the internet. You know?
Oh, they're out there.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, our whole personality.
Although I guess the podcast, yeah.
Yeah, they get our voice down, I guess, our personalities, but all we ever have talked about is movies. And
so they have me perfectly.
Yeah, okay, yeah, they've got you down. Well. Yeah.
Just throw in some random facts about the NBA at any given time, and I think that's about it.
We did a couple NBA podcasts. We did two.
That's true.
I just... That's one thing that really stuck with me, and I think this is a very good episode to think about after the fact, and that idea of the difference between what you've put on there or what you've been allowed to put on there as a representation of yourself and all the darker or more embarrassing or more personal things that you don't put online. Mm-hmm. And I mean, for some people, you would get a very accurate representation because some people are willing to put that kind of stuff out there. And especially younger people, I think, have less of a filter for what they're going to put online. So in that way, I think they'd be better off if they ever did something like this, or their loved ones would be better off replacing them in a way. But as she says, it's not enough of you. Mm-hmm. And that's another line that sticks with me, is it's just what's online. And even those people who are willing to put everything on there, you can't put everything on there. And mm-hmm. there's kind of those moments that you have with people. And that's something that happens between these two, is when she is describing their memories together to him. And it's these really intimate, personal ones that would be, I would imagine, among the most meaningful to her, but would be the ones that you wouldn't find, you know, an electronic paper trail for. Mm-hmm. And so just that concept of having someone who looks and sounds and acts exactly like your recently deceased loved one, but is completely devoid of some of the most personal memories and some of those character traits that, positive or negative, are some of the most essential things about them and about why I assume you would fall in love with them or stay in love with them and keep them around. Mm-hmm. That's what's gone. And that's what's so creepy, is to have someone who looks like and sounds like and has all these physical traits that are bang on, and absent the things that, you know, I would say truly matter about someone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I did like that line about the photos being more flattering, just because she says he's slightly better looking. And I like that, just the small boost in attractiveness by taking your most photogenic selections and mm-hmm. representing yourself that way. Mm-hmm. We talked a bit on the last podcast about looking things up,
mm-hmm.
and you know, kind of what that's doing to our brains and things like that. And we get a little example there where him being a computer connected to the internet is looks up a memory or looks up a fact, and she doesn't like it, and it's really uncomfortable, and I could understand that being the case. And he says, I'll only do it again if you ask.
Yeah, when he becomes, when, because that's before he has a body, when he has a body, does he still have that ability?
I don't know, but
they,
I
don't say
so.
I'm just curious.
I would think so.
Yeah,
I think your product is worse if it's not connected to the internet.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because then all the yeah, I guess it's possible, but you'd think he would still want to be able to access all his other memories unless it's already built in.
Yeah, it never comes into play in the episode anyway, so it's kind of a it doesn't really matter.
Good point. Yeah, those scenes of them walking around together, I think, I mean, they do look so good, but something else about those scenes where they're outside and walking, I think, are so nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's digital cinematography in natural light.
It's what?
Digital cinematography in natural light.
Oh, okay. That's what it is.
With good color correction. It just looks
okay.
They know what they're doing.
And good content. Mm. Did this episode go in a different direction than you? Does it go in a different direction than you thought it was going to?
I don't know. Like, at what point?
Well, for me, there's two points. One is when he's, whatever, cooking in the bathtub, whatever, congealing, whatever it is.
We're going to call it.
Whatever it is. And she's on the phone, and the person on the other side says, just don't turn the light on.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, you thought it was going to turn into like a horror movie?
Absolutely. Mm. I thought it was going to take, maybe I just watched too many Gremlins movies. I definitely thought it was going to take that turn because they did it in that way where you kind of get a few chances to hear it. So it's pretty clear to the viewer. But you can also see how she would not hear it. Like, it's quite obviously she's struggling with it. So if she didn't hear it, you'd be able to piece together why. I thought she was going to turn the light on and he was going to mutate. And, you know, not necessarily become like a Freddy Krueger slasher villain.
Mm-hmm.
But just that something was going to go wrong. And it was going to negatively impact this product slash person.
Yeah, I don't recall thinking that would happen.
Okay, well, that's definitely what I thought was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then even after that, when it kind of became clear that this is good, like there was a time in after he's completely made up that things are going well. Like they have a couple fights, kind of like a little thing saying, you know, like I'll only look up if you ask me to and kind of small stuff, but nothing bad. I thought it was going to be sort of like an emotional prostitution kind of thing where everything was great, but now there's paywalls. Like you get like your first month free, but if you want to keep this person, I guess, around, you have to start paying more money, or like it's a subscription service or something like that.
Okay.
And I thought she was just gonna go broke trying to keep her dead husband in her life. And I thought that would have been a really good angle to take it too, because if it's definitely not him, but if it's that close, think of what you would do to keep a loved one like that around, someone you've chose to spend the rest of your life with who's suddenly taken from you. I really thought that would be the way to go, and I thought that was going to provide a lot of interesting stuff. I still like this episode. I think it could have been done well that other way, but I like the way it is now.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of the finale, the conclusion?
Yeah, I certainly like it. I love the way that they shoot that hallway all throughout the episode, particularly in that last shot, the last wide shot where we see the measurements of Ash as a child on that doorway.
Then
the focus changes to them going up the ladder. I certainly understand why she keeps him around. And I feel like it's just sort of, she wishes she never brought him into her home, but she also can't deal with the idea of being the one to kill him.
Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, I think it's the most logical ending to me.
It's so creepy though.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Ugh, I found it just so unsettling with the fact that the daughter knows about it and brings him the piece of cake and stuff. Like that's such a weird relationship to have, this father figure that you seem to love and care about, and only be able to have him on your birthday or special occasions and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this episode I think is either best or second best for having that final shot that just is very uncomfortable, really makes you consider everything you've just watched and kind of put yourself in her shoes and deal with her repercussions. And yeah, I do love that shot of just her in the hallway with the little staircase ladder kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And her having just to sit there and deal with what she's done. And I never kind of put it together in my mind what you said about regretting bringing him back, but not so much that she could ever kill or deactivate or make him kill himself. But yeah, there's definitely a lot going on with her there, and it's definitely uncomfortable. Anything else about Be Right Back?
One of the things I like about this episode is, and it was the, I suppose, what I thought about it outside of the episode itself, is would you say, like, would you do this for anybody that's in your life right now? Like, would you bring them back from the dead?
I mean, after seeing this episode, maybe not. I think yes, because I think if you're willing to say, like, you don't want people in your life to die. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they could stay healthy, you would want them to stay alive in that way forever. Yeah. I don't want someone.
Yeah, no, of course, like, the person's already dead. You don't have to worry about offending anybody. You know?
I would say yes. As much as I watch something like this and understand exactly why it's not the best thing.
Is there a line that you would draw? Like, somebody you would bring back, somebody you wouldn't bring back?
Yes, and I'd feel horrible with...
Explaining why?
Yep, or even deciding why, even if no one ever knew it was my decision. Mm-hmm. I don't even want to think about it. But yeah, there'd definitely be people I would and wouldn't want to bring back.
Okay.
Why? What about you? That has to be everyone's answer, right?
I think so. It's just sort of like where you're able to draw the line, like who you would bring back, who you wouldn't bring back. Like I say, I would say, like, say somebody older in your life, like say your parents die, if you're at an age where you've had enough parenting, you know, like you're old enough that you have a memory of your parents. I don't know that I would, like, I mean, with all due respect to my parents, I don't know that I would bring them back, because I feel like the memory of them would be more important than actually having them in my life. Or, like, you know, not the actual parents, but the version of my parents that could still exist, you know, which just wouldn't be an accurate representation of my parents. But say if, like, let's say you die, I think I would try and bring you back. I would write all of my memories of you that I could come up with.
Not all, like, of them.
Well, the personal ones that I know wouldn't be replicated in this podcast, you know?
the good ones.
I would write them all down, and just so I have those, but I'd still have that guy I can send workaholics quotes to, you know? and I feel like that's kind of where I am with it, you know?
Yeah, it's...
Hopefully you're not offended by the fact that I would try and bring you back from the dead, but...
No, I think it's more of a compliment than anything.
Okay.
Despite
all the times I've actually tried to murder you.
Yeah, exactly. No, and that's kind of why I thought, as I said, to go to that subscription model or to have it be a financial drain on you, the idea of you only getting to select a few people who come back, you only be able to select one, you only be able to select them for a certain amount of time, mm-hmm. that idea of putting a dollar sign on relationship with someone, mm-hmm. I thought was a very fascinating idea. And I guess they don't have to explore it that much in this episode to allow me to still think about it. But I think just trying to put something so abstract and subjective, like how much you value someone or value their friendship or value their ongoing companionship, to put a dollar sign on that is just such a weird brain experiment to me.
Oh yeah, I should have pointed out I would only pay $5 to bring you back.
And only so I could punch you in the face and kill you.
Like, it would be nice if I could bring you back, but not for more than the cost of a bag of Miss Vickies.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So White Bear.
First of all, Be Right Back reminded me of the BRB messages on MSN.
Okay.
That is all.
Okay, fair enough.
Just to address the title, yeah. Which I thought was another good title. Mm-hmm. Yes, White Bear. White Bear.
Yes.
Probably the episode we disagree on the most, I'm guessing.
Why?
because I fucking love this episode.
Okay. I am not huge on it.
No, I know you're not. This is why. Yeah. We don't discuss episodes a lot before we podcast about them, but you said you were indifferent to everything in season two that's not Be Right Back.
Yeah.
And I think White Bear is one of the best. I love White Bear.
It's a 15 million merits thing, man. I feel like the things that are in White Bear, I've sort of thought about already, you know? And I don't think really... it's engaging. Every episode of the show is engaging when you're watching it. But it's just the ones that are so good that make me think about it so much that it just sort of has a different standard. And I just don't think about White Bear very much outside of watching it.
Okay. Yeah, see, I think... Yeah, technology-wise, I think I agree with you saying that this kind of stuff is done better other places. I think the entire history of you followed slightly behind would be Be Right Back, I think, are the most interesting technologically to think about. Mm. This one, I think, is the most interesting ethically of mm-hmm. all the episodes. Okay. There is some cool technology stuff in this that I like, but I think from a moral standpoint, this is the one that I think about the most and I think is the most interesting one. And it's mostly what comes after the big reveal is what's interesting to me ethically. I still don't know how I feel about that reveal. But yeah, from the get-go, I think it's interesting. I think this would be another one of the most accessible ones just because the pace of it is so fast. You don't really know what's going on, but in that way, it's engaging that you're trying to figure it out. And it's just action-y. Like, it's fast. It's mm-hmm. you don't even really have to understand what's going on. But
yeah, but it does exist in a world where things are different, a world we don't recognize, you know? You have to be okay with being thrown into something that you don't understand. You know?
Yeah, but it's not 15 million merits different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's today, or at least it would seem as such. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think just because of the action, because there's always something going on, I think it's pretty accessible in that way. But I think, yeah, after the reveal, things definitely take a twist. Yeah, very unsettling. Again, like you're just kind of confused off the get-go. You don't understand what's happening, as you said. You're really just thrown into it. And right away with everyone.
It's a mix of like 28 Days Later and The Game. Like that's what this reminds me of. Like the beginning is very much 28 Days Later, and the second the reveal happens, I'm like, oh, this is The Game.
So, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Did you hate kind of right away when they're like, is this kind of what you're talking about when you said you've seen this before? How everyone just watching through their cell phones, and it was kind of the whole like, oh, we're just spectators who don't really give a shit what happens anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And it was something that on some level I agree with, but sort of the zombie-ish like nature that the outside of them just walking around going, you know, like and maybe drooling. Like it was just pretty it was like, yeah, I don't know. It was again old man yelling to me. Yeah.
Well, and they say kind of very early on it was a TV signal. It did they just became onlookers. Like
yeah.
that to you is just a very broad way of saying like, look what TV and phones have done to people. They don't engage in reality anymore, and they're just viewers.
Yeah. It's okay. Just a little simplistic.
Yeah. And then Jemima, our lead character here.
I thought it was Victoria.
Oh, no, Jemima's a little girl. Yes, Victoria, you're absolutely right. Victoria says, the signal on TV, that's what's making them like this. And then the girl who we later learn has been in on it the whole time says, nope, they're always like that underneath. They just needed the rules to change.
Mm-hmm.
That's more the same thing for you, eh?
Yeah.
Okay. Just yeah. people overall have always been this bad, but now that technology is kind of allowing them the distance and the anonymity to just be an onlooker and not really engage with these things, but kind of you know, watch YouTube clips of bad things happening to bad people and it being funny.
Yeah, well, I think it's just sort of, I think that sort of ties into something I feel about the whole series is the ability to just sort of follow our impulses. And I think that's very much what Black Mirror is about. The immediacy of technology sort of removes thoughtfulness. And we can just sort of follow our first instinct all the time now, and that's rarely the smartest option. You know?
Yeah.
And that's sort of, if Black Mirror has a thesis statement, that's kind of what I think it is. And yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
And I think that's very, very present in White Bear.
Okay. So I don't think there's that much to say about kind of everything up until the reveal. It's kind of as you said, essentially a zombie.
Yeah. What it's zombies. Yeah.
It's zombies for some of them, but then they're being hunted. It's zombies plus the Running Man, I would say.
Yeah, that's true.
Because they do have those people hunting them down with their weird deer masks and electric
knives. Yeah,
the
Wyatt family chasing them down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah,
that is the first time Black Mirror and WWE have ever been put in the same sentence.
Leave it to the MacGuffin, man.
Yeah. You're welcome, Charlie Brooker.
Yeah, so it's, you know, I think action until the reveal, and then after the fact, after the reveal, I think is when we can sort of reflect on what we had seen, everything up until that point.
Mm-hmm.
What was your honest, like, initial feeling when those doors swung open and it was a stage, there was an audience there?
Like, whether I felt positively or negatively about it, or?
Yeah, sure.
I don't think it really moved the needle either way.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think I had a strong reaction. I just sort of was like, oh, this is just things have changed. You know?
This is what's happening now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think like very quickly I would have thought about the game. Basically once the host starts talking.
Yeah.
And that mixed with a little bit, like at least visually, it looked kind of like that bit of Requiem for a Dream with Christopher McDonald. So I think I probably would have thought about those two things quickly. But
okay.
As far as my opinion on the actual Black Mirror episode, I don't think it changed a lot. Yeah.
Okay. So as I said, I think ethically this is probably the most interesting one.
Okay.
How do you feel about this form of, let's call it punishment?
I don't know.
It seems there's no attempt at rehabilitating people.
Yeah, it's kind of like, there's definitely no attempt at rehabilitating person. It's just sort of,
if anything, you're driving them towards suicide or an accidental death.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. And it's just sort of like, you would never have like the cumulative effect of the torture on them because they get their memory wiped every day. So I don't know if that, but I also don't know if that makes it worse or better.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
It's just the worst day of your life over and over until I don't even know, till you die, till I don't know the end game of this punishment really.
Yeah. Yeah. I really don't know. I mean, the things they outline are pretty shitty, that Victoria did. So, I mean, it's hard to feel for her, but.
Yeah, that's the problem is you spend so much time feeling for her before you understand what it is she's done. Like I feel like you've already sympathized with her for 40 minutes, you know, being chased, almost being raped with a power drill is I think what was going to happen at one point, you know, threatened with guns, threatened with knives, seen people be killed in front of you, mm-hmm. and then just being terrified for what seems like 16 hours since the morning until the dark of night.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a bad day.
Well, yeah,
to say the least. Mm-hmm. I guess this kind of public justice is one idea that I thought about a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Just letting the people into what's called a justice park to see this woman suffer. And the fact that there was such a long hunt for Jemima, the little girl who was kidnapped and murdered, that would be such a huge story, and the hunt for this person would be massive, and the public vitriol for this person would just be so intense.
Well, yeah, the one thing I think this, or two things, I guess, that this episode really made me think of, one was Casey Anthony, just sort of the, I don't know, Time wrote an interesting thing about it a couple years ago, about how the Casey Anthony trial was sort of the first social media trial.
The reaction was so much about what was said on public media, social media, and so much of why people hated her was the kind of stuff she was posting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, both in the response to it and actual evidence. It was, this is a picture she posted this soon after her daughter.
Yeah, yeah,
was
exactly.
Killed.
Like the partying 4 days later thing.
Yeah.
And I just sort of thought about, I don't know. I don't know that the cues are, or the case is close enough, or that the cues in White Bear are close enough, but it did sort of make me think about, this is just sort of the way people are discussed now. Like, even such a small scale example in comparison, but Raymond Felton, the point guard of the New York Knicks, was arrested yesterday on weapons charges. And since he's a New York Knick, there was a lot of media coverage, and there were a lot of people in New York and otherwise tweeting about it. And it was just so immediately, I don't know, the reaction was fascinating in a way that was so immediately judgmental. You know, there's always the assumption that, of course, he pointed a gun at his wife or whatever the charges ended up being. And I think that was the first accusation, was he actually, like, pointed a loaded gun at his wife, whereas the charges ended up just sort of being, like, misdemeanor weapons possession charges. Weapons possession.
Armor-piercing rounds, too.
Oh, was that part of it?
Yeah, people don't like that.
Yeah, no, it's a no-no, I think. And yeah, just sort of the reaction to it was fascinating, and just very quickly you're getting jokes about how his shooting percentage is so bad this year, we don't need to worry about Raymond Felton having guns, you know.
Ugh.
And just images being edited and stuff like that. But yeah, it's just sort of, you're on trial way before you're on trial now, you know, and the public is a much, much swifter jury. You know?
Yeah, and I guess part of this...
And more decisive, and more, I think, I mean, other than not being able to put you away in jail or sending you to this justice theme park, certainly very damaging.
Yeah, and I think one of the interesting things about this episode is that, you know, we sympathized with her for so long, she's our protagonist. She's the one we follow around. We kind of feel her fear and her confusion and her panic for 40 minutes. And then we learn who she is, and we learn that there's no question that she did this.
Yeah.
You know, there's footage. It's not like, oh, imagine they're doing something this awful to someone who's innocent. It was, this is a fact. This is what she did. You know, child killing is obviously seen as one of the worst things you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And so they never give you that play of, what if they get the wrong person? It's like, no, we absolutely know that she did something that's absolutely reprehensible. Is it okay if we punish her in this manner? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's so public. It's, you know, to say the least.
It's a what? Sorry?
Cruel and unusual punishment, to say the least, which is something governments say they try to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one interesting thing about it is that she never killed the kid. She just filmed it. Obviously, she's absolutely guilty of doing something horrible, but I think that's kind of what the one of the interesting things to think about is that the public, the people who go to this park, aren't the ones chasing her with knives. They're not shooting at her. They're just filming. It's just their chance to film. And that's all she kind of did as well. So it's interesting to put the people who visit this park in a similar role as her, and kind of take this idea of watching as innocence and not being complicit in it. And, you know, the way we will quickly watch a YouTube video of someone getting hurt, or we'll make fun of someone who's going through a hard time in their life, because we're at a distance and we're not the ones doing it. We're just watching and pointing and laughing. So we haven't really done anything wrong. It's her who's done something wrong. But by that logic, she hasn't done something wrong. And I'm absolutely not defending Victoria, but, you know, to take that mentality.
Well, yeah, the episode wants you to think that.
Exactly. To take that mentality and apply it to everything in the episode, you kind of see this is a pretty big ethical dilemma here. And again, with the closing on this one, I really like the scenes during the credits. I thought were wonderful of, you know, just what it's like to work at this Justice Park and, you know, oh, she'll be here in 3 minutes. Get up on your tree. And, you know, they're having cigarettes and coffee and just kind of, you know, relaxing like it's any other day at work. And then she's having the worst day of her life again in, you know, 30 seconds. And the banality of evil, I think, is always something that fascinates and horrifies me. And I think just kind of that minimal music, very quiet, slow stuff over the credits after you've has become, you know, we've done 55 minutes of running and chasing and screaming and car chases and gunfights. And, you know, now everything's just so calm and, you know, way too calm, way too plain, way too monotonous. And to just treat this, you know, it's like the Nazis, the way that they went about everything is just a day of work and, you know, just 9 to 5 doing what I need to do, no matter how horrible it is, just to, you know, get back home. I thought was a very, very good way to go out on this episode. Like, it's really, really heart-wrenching and like heart-pounding the whole time. And then this very kind of quiet finish that, you know, made me feel more uncomfortable than the entire episode did up until that point. So
okay.
I think the episode's great. And I think that the ending really, really drives it home for me as well.
Okay.
Anything else about White Bear?
Nope.
Okay. Waldo moment. I'm guessing this will be our shortest segment.
Sure.
What have you got on Waldo moment? This is the most they really deal with politics. Like, this is very much so about politics, which is something that we don't get much of in the other ones. I mean, we get a small bit of it in National Anthem, but that's not really about how technology has changed the political discourse as much as how it's changed people's reaction to politicians. This one is very much about politician and policy decisions.
Yeah, and it's also about
John Stewart.
It's about transparency, I think, as well. And the problems that a politician has just sort of in dealing with somebody that's expected to be funny, or somebody that is funny. I guess it's expected to be funny, because you're just sort of dealing with a different set of expectations for yourself. Like, a politician can't be a comedian, because a comedian is expected to say some off the cuff stuff. Whereas, you know, like, you're allowed to be kind of a crazy person if you're a comedian, whereas politicians have to be so calculated, you know what I mean? Because they can't worry about offending anybody. If a comedian offends somebody, then, you know, they're a comedian. It's helpful. If a politician offends somebody, then there's actual votes at play, you know, particularly if Mr. Monroe offends somebody. And that's sort of the thing I really like about the Waldo moment, is that scene where Mr. Monroe talks back to Waldo and talks back to him well. I enjoy that. It's sort of like this, that he's able to be sort of like this calculated politician, but also keep up with a comedian. He never has to sink to his level, but he is able to keep up with him in his own way, you know.
Yeah, and what I like when they're on that little talk show panel there, but what you said about transparency, I think is a big complaint that people have about the way governments run and the way politicians are. And as you said, there's kind of just a facade, and they're this face, and there's probably something else going on underneath, but we never get to see that. We don't get to see who they really are. We get to see just this very vanilla, plain version of them. And so when he turns the tables on Waldo and says, oh, you're just this comedian whose, you know, biggest credit was this one commercial and you've never managed to make a career out of it. You know, that's transparency. That's, you know, completely saying exactly what's happening for real, who these people really are. And it's, you know, so antithetical to what kind of Waldo and people who love Waldo presumably would be about.
Yeah.
You know, they want things that are real. They want to know who you really are. And we learn who Waldo really is, and the comedian's not into it. And I guess Waldo fans wouldn't find that the best Waldo there is either.
Yeah. And another thing I really like about this episode is I suppose I don't know much about Mr. Monroe's policies in the episode, but he's kind of, he seems like the way he's set up, he seems like a very ideal politician to a smart person. Like, he is smart and he's thoughtful, and but he doesn't seem to pander. And particularly with the way things to be tend to be moving, politicians turning more into comedians is a big concern for me. And just sort of doing anything to get a vote is very, very concerning. And I mean, it's only going to get worse, but that's something that I really like about the character of Monroe, is that he really sort of balances the line between being able to talk back to people, but also doing it without being offensive. I don't think he does anything out of line. Nope. And I, yeah, anyways, but yeah, Mr. Monroe is the most interesting part of this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think Monroe's good. Mm-hmm. For some more of the technology stuff in this episode, I enjoy their discussion about how Waldo could function as a real candidate. And just from the modern angle, they said, you know, now we have iPhones and computers. We can just put everything to a vote. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Mm-hmm. The technology is in place to have, pardon the pun, but have such a puppet, like a mm-hmm. public puppet for a politician. Mm-hmm. Someone who will just respond immediately to what the public thinks. And he's right. I mean, with iPhones, with computers, with smartphones, with digital technology, you could put out something and get a very immediate gauge on it. Now, it's true democracy in a way, but it sounds so bad, doesn't it? Like, just to have a politician that has no real spine, has no real stance on anything, but is just completely at the whim of the public. As much as that's true democracy, it sounds so cheap and bad, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's sort of like it was when I was saying with White Bear, I sort of feel like the thesis of Black Mirror is basically all about removing thoughtfulness from the equation. And I know I've told this quote on the podcast before a couple of years ago, but Patton Oswalt talking about the difference between Steven Spielberg now and in the 1970s, specifically with Jaws. Steven Spielberg was a much better director in 1976 because he was dealing with more things standing in the way of his ideas. Everybody knows about the problems, the shark problems on Jaws, and so that's the reason why we don't see the shark. Like, there in the original idea of the movie, the shark is much more present in Jaws, like on screen. And Spielberg gets to a point where he can do whatever he wants and he doesn't have to worry about thinking about a second idea. And Patton Oswalt's theory is that the reason the first 30 minutes of Saving Private Ryan is so powerful is because the weather and the sand and all that stuff that's present on the beach sort of removes his first ideas, and he has to sort of be able to adapt. And that's something that I think applies to technology all the time. I mean, a big thing that Patton Oswalt would point to for the Steven Spielberg theory is that he has access to whatever technology he needs as long as it exists, because he's Steven Spielberg, he can do whatever. And I think that sort of applies to how we exist in a day-to-day or our day-to-day world, is that we can sort of have a thought, put it out there, and then we don't have to think about it anymore because the thought, we feel like we've completed the thought because we've tweeted it or whatever. And it's just sort of, we move on to the next thing, and that's very much what I think Black Mirror is about, and I find that very interesting to think about. And I think Waldo is very much representative of the immediate base reaction to something a politician says.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the immediate reaction to what they says, one of the other things they, when considering Waldo as a real politician or his value in a debate in particular was, you know, Waldo has a team. You know, Waldo, the image is out there, but it's being supplied by everyone, you know, not just this comedian running it, but kind of the producer and anybody else, you know, back in that van or in the backstage in a control room somewhere. And he says, your team could Google everything the other guy says, then hit them with Twitter-ready debunk stats in the next sentence. He's the perfect assassin. I just want to know what you thought of that idea of having someone, you know, not so much with the Twitter-ready debunk, but the stats, to have a politician with a mind that can actually look up facts. And I remember some of the debates between Obama and Romney saying, like,
check the transcript.
Exactly. That's just not true. Like, it's one of those things where Waldo seems like so cheap and such a detriment to the political discourse. But the idea of not letting someone go in a debate for lying to your face, like, that seems so positive.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that was, I mean, I was such a big fan of that moment of the debates for obvious reasons. And yeah, no, I agree with you.
Yeah, it's, they do put Waldo kind of in this weird spot where it appears like he has value. And then you look at it from Monroe's side, and everything he says about, you know, this is so bad for the discourse, having a comedian up here, you know, your jokes are about how politicians don't have substance, but there's no substance to you. Like, yeah, it's, for you to say this is so hypocritical. At least I'm putting my face out there and my opinions to have the debate, agree or disagree, and let's talk it out. Whereas Waldo kind of pokes fun at everything, but never provides an alternative to how things could ever get better, just how funny it is that things suck so much right now.
Yep.
And we get that so clearly when the American comes and they have that dinner together, and he says about Waldo and I guess the comedian, he says, there's no substantial basis for what you offer, and the whole nihilist democracy sucks thing is kind of wackadoo, but with a targeted hopeful message, which we will provide, we can target the disenfranchised without spooking the middle via your new platform. Mm-hmm. You've got a global political entertainment product people want. So global political entertainment product. Yeah. Right away.
Yeah.
I love that. You know, and then Waldo's handler there says, like, Pringles? And he says, yeah, absolutely. It's packaged as a product. I mean, I don't think we need to look too deep into that about why that's not the best thing for politics. But he says, like, there is no substantial basis. There's nothing here, but we can use that as a pure conduit for pure democracy. And with a big helping of capitalism along the way, it's a very interesting way to phrase that, to put Waldo, and how finding the value in something so goofy and also finding how detrimental it can be. And it's just, you know, at the end of every discussion we've had about every Black Mirror episode, it's about this positive and all the negative that comes with it as well.
Yeah.
So overall, you know, you've said it a few times, but the thesis is, or not the thesis, but the takeaway is this technology is negative, right?
I don't think a hard negative, but certainly more negative than positive.
Okay.
The last of the end of the Waldo moment ends with basically the apocalypse. So.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not a particularly positive show. I think it just sort of,
our protagonist is homeless and the world is on fire.
Yeah, the more optimistic person in me is like, it's a show about thoughtfulness, not about we're all going to hell.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Charlie Brooker, the creator of the series, did an interview with The Guardian, and they asked about the title, and Brooker said, if technology is a drug, and it does feel like a drug, then what precisely are the side effects? This area between delight and discomfort is where Black Mirror, my new drama series, is set. The Black Mirror of the title is the only one, is the one you'll find on every wall, on every desk, in the palm of every hand. The cold, shiny screen of a TV, a monitor, a smartphone. I love that. I love the title, especially with that explanation.
Yeah. Yeah. I hadn't heard that quote before, but the last part, I mean, it's pretty easy to put together, but I like the idea about the side effects.
Yeah. And I guess that's kind of what you're saying. It's not so much about this drug is a bad drug. It's,
Oh, yeah. That's why I like it, because it lines up with what I think.
No, but it's not as though he's saying this is a bad thing. Look at the bad things that it's doing. It's, you know, drugs are invented to do something. I mean, yeah. If we're talking about prescription drugs and things in medicine, it's to do something. It's to solve a problem. It's to make things better or easier or tolerable or simply to keep you alive. Mm-hmm. But what are the side effects? What are the unintended consequences? And are those side effects worth whatever we're getting out of it? Mm-hmm. But yes, now I cannot look at like a television or when it's not lit up. Yeah. But I do love it, and as you said, it's not so hard to see, but just that the darkness of it, like you see the outline of a head but you see no face, you see mm-hmm. reflection but no light, like mm-hmm. it's so much be right back, it's everything's there except what matters. It looks so much the representation of our world through technology looks so much like our world, but it's so much of the important, fundamentally true things missing. And one of the side effects is just those things going away. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about just the quote of technology is a drug?
Yeah, I think it's unequivocally true. No equivs.
None quivs. Okay, so if we'll accept that, and I think it's absolutely right, isn't the danger that this is a drug we're never going to get away from? Like, technology, despite what Dennis Duffy thinks, is linear and not cyclical. So aren't we always just going to get further into this and, you know, like a drug, have more of a tolerance and thereby more of a dependence on this?
Yes.
Okay. That's reassuring.
Yep.
Like, again, in Be Right Back, they say Ash is a heavy user. Like, it just aligns it so much with the drug. But
and that's
it means you're ready for more. You're more willing for it, and you're just going deeper and deeper.
Exactly. And that's why I think it's I like to think that it's a show about thoughtfulness, in that this show accepts that technology is a thing that will continue to progress. It just wants us to think about its progression. And that's all I need. I don't need
technology sucks.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't need technology to disappear. I just need somebody to be okay with me not immediately accepting smartphones as a part of my life, you know?
Yeah.
That's all I need.
Yeah,
and I think that's what Black Mirror does. And the episodes of Black Mirror that I find less engaging, I think do that less.
And the fact that, I mean, people have always said technology's changing and there's always are changing society for the pretty much always to the detriment.
Yeah, exactly.
The squeaky wheels, at least. That things are getting worse and worse. But I think we're at a point where, with accelerated culture, like, you can see how much culture's changed just in our lifetime and how quickly technology moves now. I think now more than ever, it's necessary to think about these things. And as you said, it's not necessary to banish these things, but because things move more quickly than we can really get our heads around, I think it's necessary to step back and look at what's really happening. And if this show does anything, it does that, and it examines these side effects, and I think in a very, very thought-provoking and entertaining way. And that's why this is one of my favorite shows that's come out in the last few years by a long shot. Mm-hmm. Cool. So the future is broken.
Yep.
And thanks for listening to the MacGuffin, man.
Yeah, be sure to check back next week when we continue contributing to the advancement of podcast technology.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.